Good evening. It's 8 o'clock in Yerushalayim, and let's learn a little bit about this week's parasha, the parasha of Beshalach. This shiur is dedicated by Rebecca and Shalom Bronstein. Thank you very much. If we thought of Yetziat Mitzrayim, this whole kind of this event. The Eser Makot, the 10 plagues that God brought down upon the Egyptians, the last plague seems to me always to have been really terrible. The death of the firstborn, I mean, how could anybody ignore that? And if we would say to ourselves, like, what was the purpose of all this? What was the purpose of this complicated Yetziat Mitzrayim of talking to Paro and Paro rejecting the request? I mean, what was the point? So I think everybody would come up with the following obvious point, that the process was there in order to educate Bnei Yisrael about something, and also to educate the Egyptians about something. Now, the interesting thing is that the two things are close to each other, but they're not the same. What was it that we were going to educate Am Yisrael about? Well, I think we were going to educate Am Yisrael that promises that originate with God are always going to be kept. I mean, they were in Egypt for 210 years. It was a long time had passed since the promise had been made to Avraham Avinu, the promise that Bnei Yisrael would get the land of Canaan. And they had read every reason imaginable to think that that promise was no longer valid or that God had forgotten about it. So what was it that Bnei Yisrael were going to learn from this process? What were they going to learn? That promises that originate with God are kept. And if God promised Avraham Avinu that the land of Canaan would belong to his descendants, that is the way it's going to be. It's not relevant to quote the reality. The reality is unimportant. That was what Bnei Yisrael might learn from Yetziat Mitzrayim. Now, what about the Egyptians? What could they learn? Well, it's what Moshe Rabbeinu told them again and again. There's one God, and the one God is all powerful, and there's no point in trying to take a stand against God. No point. Because it's not going to work. Not going to work. That's what the Egyptians might learn from the process of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And even though the Egyptians, we don't expect that the Egyptians will be as the Jews are. No, we don't expect that. But something they might learn about God, about power, about the world, about creation. But all of these things that are in doubt, all these things that are in doubt, I have to remember the Greeks had trouble with these things. But the Egyptians might have learned it from the process of Yetziat Mitzrayim. So look at the first pasuk in this parasha. Vayehi b'shalach paro. I mean, I know that this is not necessarily true, but look. The first name we meet up with after the supposed defeat of Pharaoh and the Egyptians in the last plague, the one that the firstborn children were wiped out. Vayehi b'shalach paro. Paro sent them. B'shalach paro. Not God sent them. Vayehi b'shalach paro et ha'am. So I have to say, that if this interpretation is viable, that it was It was the Egyptians who said Bishalach Baro, and the Jews. The Jews didn't say. The Jews said Bishalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayhi Bishalach Baro et Ha'am. And then you have another comment. That's the first comment about Paro. Another comment about the Am, the people who escaped. Lo nacham Elokim derech eretz plishtim ki karovu. He says, God did not send them through the land of the Philistines. So the Philistines were like more or less what we call today Aza. Ritzuat Aza, the Aza Strip. That was the land of the Philistines in those days. So God didn't send them that way through the land of the Philistines. Ki karovu. Well, that sounds almost like a mistake. With the karov who, that's the reason you should send them. They could get right to Eretz Kinaan, Kiyam Har Elokim, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought about it, so to speak. Pen yinachem ha'am b'rotam milchama b'shav Mitzrayim. You mean after all of what happened in Egypt, after all of the beating that was given to the Egyptians, after all the power and the might that God expressed in this process, at the end of all of this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was worried. So if we say that Yetziat Mitzrayim was an event that had educational value on the one hand for the Egyptians. We should learn about divine power and who is in charge of whatever is going on in the world. And if it was about Am Yisrael, to learn that we can depend on a divine promise. There's no doubt that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says we'll inherit the land, that we're going to inherit the land. There's no doubt about that. And here you see in this pasuk, in the first pasuk, you see the exact opposite. First of all, you see Bishalach Paro, that Paro was the one who had the power here. And then, so the Egyptians, and Paro was the one who sent them. The Egyptians obviously didn't learn anything. They didn't know anything about what was really happening, right? B'shalach Paro. And then when it comes to Am Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch was worried that even leaving Mitzrayim, running off into the desert, if they would go in the short way, we're going the short way to Eretz Canaan, they might decide to turn around and come back. Imagine that after all the miracles, and after all the, I wouldn't say effort, but all of the concern that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had for Am Yisrael, at the end, there's a worry in heaven that they're going to turn around and run away. They're going to turn around and run away and go back to wherever they came from. They'll go back to wherever it was they came from, to Egypt. The next pasuk says, pasuk Yud Chet 18, Vayasev, God turned them around, went around the long way, at the Am Derech Hamidbar Yam Suf. So that's why he did that. And then the continuation of the pasuk says, Chamushim Alu B'nei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim, Chamushim. You see the word Chamushim in Rashi? I'll underline it. You have to find it. Here, you see it? Chamushim. Ein chamushim ele mizuyanim. Chamushim means that they're armed. They have arms with them. Lefi shesivan b'midbar garam lahem shalu chamushim. Because God took them around, they had to be armed. They had to be armed because who knows what's going to happen. Shilu sivan derech yishuv. Lo ayu mechumashim lahem kol mashetzrichim. He says, if God had taken them through a populated area, it would be different. But since they went through the desert, they had to have arms. Elaka Adam, shover b'makom l'makom, a person goes from one place to another, he has it planned out that he'd be able to go in a day from place A to place B, and when he gets to place B, he'll buy whatever he needs. He has to get everything in advance when he goes into the desert because there's no red apple rest along the way. For those of you old enough to remember what the red apple rest is. Elika Adam, I'm sorry, this is just that we should be able to, I don't know, we should like have something to think about. Shelo titma b'milchemet Amalek, b'milchemet Sichon v'Og Midyan. Do not be surprised that later on there would be wars against Amalek and wars against Sichon and Og and Midyan. Ve'echan ha'yilehem klei zayin. How did they have the weaponry to fight the war? Shekum Yisrael b'cherem, because they have to, they won all of these battles. Cheno Omer, v'atem ta'avru chamushim. This is for Rashi, a proof. But I mean, I think, I just don't get it. They didn't trust God, and so they might run back. But they took weapons with them in order to fight the battles of the future, and they didn't run back to Eretz Mitzrayim. I think what Rashi is trying to tell us is that Bnei Yisrael were on shaky ground, spiritually, religiously. They just were not confident. They were not confident. It goes back to the Makkah of Dam, the first of the 10 Makot, where the magicians of Mitzrayim were able to imitate what Moshe and Aaron brought upon the world. Maybe not quite as much or as serious, but they did it. They did it somehow. So there we are. Again, Rashi is very Birota Milchama. You see, Pasuk Yud Zayin, the first Pasuk, right? Pen Yenachem Am Birota Milchama Vishavu Mitzrayim. I think that means that things are going to be normal. These people have to be normalized. Normalized means that you have to take responsibility. You can't just stand there and say, God, save me. That's certainly not the way it works in the world. And even, so that's what Rashi says, Ki Amar Elokim, God said, Ben Yinechamem Barota Milchama V'Shava Mitzrayma. Barota Milchama, I mean, after all, they're going into the desert. They are usurpers, so to speak. They're going to do something that nobody else has ever done. So this is the way I read the psukim. You could say, in a kind of a humorous way, Yitzhak Mitzrayim was a failure. I mean, whatever it was that Yitzhak Mitzrayim was supposed to accomplish, and I'm not saying that we've got it down perfectly, but we have it approximately. But the Egyptians were supposed to learn something. The Jews were supposed to learn something. It doesn't make any sense to say that God put them into the slavery of Mitzrayim for no reason at all. And there's certainly Yitzhak Mitzrayim was a grand event. And certainly Bnei Yisrael would be expected to learn from Yitzhak Mitzrayim. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says no. And more interesting, Vayhi B'Shalach Paro, the Torah records that the exodus, the actual leaving of Mitzrayim, was either the responsibility of it or to the credit of Paro, as I state. That's what it says in the Pasuk. V'yibishalach Paro et ha'am. V'yibishalach Paro et ha'am. Now there's a turnaround. Things change in the course of the parsha of Bishalach, and they change at Kriyat Yamsuf. They change at Kriyat Yamsuf. And the Rambam says that Kriyat Yamsuf, the splitting of the Red Sea, was something special. You can't really compare it to any other miracle. And since it was special, and you can't compare it to any other miracle, it must be something from which you learn. So in other words, you can really, really get something out of it. But what happened to Bnei Yisrael is this pasuk, Perek Tedvav, pasuk Aleph. Do you see it? Az Yashir Moshe over Bnei Yisrael. There's no longer Paro. There's Moshe. Moshe Bnei Yisrael. He's leading the singing. He's leading the singing. Let's say singing is singing. You know, music, words, together, singing. Something you do when you have extreme emotional connection. That's something you do. Stam. I know there are people who sing in the shower. Yeah, I know that. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a reaction to an extraordinary event, as Hashem Moshe in Israel. In fact, it was so extraordinary and so wondrous that we have a record of this singing, of the words. We don't have a record of the music, unfortunately, but we have a record of the words by Yomru Lemor, and they said, but it said, "Bnei Yisrael Hashira Hazot LaShem." That's what it says. That it was a song that was appropriate for thanking God. It was appropriate. I mean, you know that there's music in our tradition. Beit Hamikdash, the Leviim, they sang. Singing was something that. That went with the korbanot, with the sacrifices. So the words which we say every day, and when we daven, every day. Ashir Hashem ki ga'oga asus rapor amavayam. That's how it starts, and it continues. And of course, the words of the Shirat Hayam, as we have them, are interesting and difficult and special, but I don't want to get to those words. I want to just look at this pasuk. Az Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael. Az means afterwards. Afterwards, after something that happened, Moshe Rabbeinu became, right, he took over from Paro. Remember Paro? Bishalach Paro. Paro was in charge of Yitziat Mitzrayim. But Moshe Rabbeinu was in charge of thanking HaKadosh Baruch. But you know, you thank somebody, you kind of bring a gift. And to bring a gift for HaKadosh Baruch, not an easy thing. So Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who brought a song to HaKadosh Baruch, Rashi. Rashi says, "Az Yashir Moshe, Az." The way I read it, "Az Kama, Az Kishera Nes." When he saw what had happened with Kriyat Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, Allah Belibo She Yashir Shira. What do you think that means? Allah Belibo. It doesn't mean. It doesn't mean. Oh, he remembered that he had to sing a song. It doesn't mean that. It means something special happened to him. Allah Bilibo, I mean, your heart is like the place of special emotional concern. and consideration. So it says, "Et Hashira." I'm sorry. Rashi says, "Askshira Hanes Allah Bili Boshi Ashir Shira." What does that mean? Allah Bili Boshi Ashir Shira. I mean, is that what he always did? No, we never heard of that before. We never heard that he was a poet, or a troubadour, a singer, a musician. Allah Bili Bo. He suddenly realized that he could do it. I mean, it's like very similar to somebody who's never played the piano, sitting down and just playing the piano in a very kind of professional and superior manner. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what Rashi says. Allah Bili Bo Shishira. And that's what the word Az references. It just then. That moment, and then Rashi brings other proofs of this. Right? Then he gets involved in Yashir. Why is it Yashir? But again, this part is what interests me. Allah Bilibo, I mean, what could that possibly mean? So I think it means that Moshe Rabbeinu did something he never did before. And he, what he did before, he did. Right? Ubene Yisrael, he did it with everybody. But the Allah Belibo is his, was Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? He was the leader, the conductor, the person who led this thanksgiving. Right? Et Hashira Hazot Lashem. He sang a song that was the appropriate thanks to God. Vayomru, and they said it all together. Moshe Rabbeinu led them, but having led them, they understood how to follow, and they became singers with Moshe Rabbeinu, with singers with Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, there's another pasuk or two that I think we should note. Vatikach Miriam Hanevia. You see Pasuk Kaf. Vatikach Miriam Hanevia. Miriam, the prophetess. Achot Aharon. Achot Aharon. You know she was also Achot Moshe. Achot Aharon. Et hatov biyada. She took the drum, I guess. Drum. Vetitzena kol hanashim achareha betupim uvimcholot. So we learned something. I will get to the pasuk, but tupim uvimcholot means there was music. There was music. And you know, when there's music, the words tend to disappear. I don't mean that we don't say the words. We say the words, but they lose importance. The music dominates. That's why you can go to listen to an opera in Italian. If you don't understand the word of Italian, or can't speak a word of Italian, because it's all music. It's all music. Even musicals in English, the words are not particularly important. You get the general idea. But the importance is that it's all music. The words, I think, become part of the music. So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, Vatikach Miriam Anaviya. Just one second. Rashi asks a good question. Eichan nitna ba? What is the Torah calling her Neviya? Navi is a status that is bestowed upon a person by heaven. Where was did this happen? So Rashi says, okay, Shaita Achot Aharon, Kishaita Achot Aharon. That's like you have to read the pasuk. He answers another question. Why doesn't the pasuk say Achot Moshe Aharon? So because it's explaining Neviyah. When was she a Neviyah? Achot Aharon. Then she was a Neviyah, right? Achot Aharon, Kodem Shenolad Moshe. Before Moshe Rabbeinu was born, Amra, she said, Atida imisha teveit ben b'chulei, my mother's going to have a son. Kedeita v'sota, that's a Gemara, the Gemara says that. So she's really asking the question, answering the question of why it says Achot Aharon, but not Achot Moshe. But she doesn't, so he does that by saying that, one, that the explanation of Neviyah, but Rashi is insisting that the word Neviyah has to be explained. I mean, okay, he has his way of doing it, but the word Neviyah is kind of out of place. Achot Aharon, et atov biyadah, what about the tov? At the tov, Rashi says, kli shel minei zemer. Tov doesn't mean just a something you bang on, but it's a word that covers all of the musical instruments. Tupim and mecholot, that's what it says at the end of the pasuk. Tupim are drums and mecholot are things that make nice noises. Move, Rashi says, muftachat hayu tzidkaniyot shebador, shakadosh baruch hu oseh lehem nisim. The righteous of that generation, the women who are righteous, was certain that God oselahem nisim, that God would do miracles. Votziu tupim mimitzrayim, and they took these instruments with them when they left Mitzrayim. Okay. I mean, I don't know if that's such a good. But you know, Rashi wants to tell us, you know, there's always like that nudnik in the class who says, why did they take tupim and mecholot with them? Why didn't they take just, you know, clothing or something? Why did they take tupim and mecholot? So Rashi answers that question. The next pasuk says, Matan lahem Miriam. Matan lahem Miriam. Rashi, look at the Rashi. Moshe Amar Shira Lanashim. Where he omer v'hem onim acharav. Miriam Amra Shira Lanashim. And as Rashi says, Matan lahem Miriam is the same as Az Yashir Moshe uvene Yisrael. But I think that there might be a point of distinction. So, okay, there was a change. In the beginning of the story in Bishalach, we know that it's Paro. Now that the Egyptians have all been done away with, it's definitely Moshe. Paro expresses the fact that he didn't learn anything from Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu expressed the fact that he's the great teacher of how to be thankful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what has happened. Now there's a famous Torah of Rav Nachman of Breslov, which we can't learn today. But we can look at a couple of lines, which I think might be helpful in understanding, especially what a Shira is. First he says this, you have to know this, that when the tzaddik sings, has a nigun, shehu b'chinat Moshe, that he is like Moshe Rabbeinu. How is he like Moshe Rabbeinu? Okay, he has his idea. U'malet ha'neshamot min ha'pikorsut hazot. This is what he talked about. He kind of fixes things. The tzaddik is able to fix things. But let me go back and explain the beginning of that line. Da shal yideh nigun shel hatzadik shehu bechinat Moshe. What is hu bechinat Moshe? So there was this idea in Chassidut that when the Torah tells us stories, and in the stories there are special people, those stories are told to us because every generation needs those special people or somebody who plays the role of one of those special people. So when he says, a tzaddik hu bechinat Moshe, so there is in every generation, every time, there is a righteous person. There is a righteous person there because we need him. We can't live without him. And just as the people in Yitzhak Mitzrayim couldn't live without Moshe Rabbeinu, we can't live without the representative of Moshe Rabbeinu in our generation. And so the nigun of the tzaddik, the nigun, that's Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. So what's the nigun of the tzaddik? What does it mean to say that there is a melody that is associated with the tzaddik? So I think that melody is the neutralization of words. Words, we all know, are wondrous things. They lead us to all sorts of wonderful places, but they don't always leave us with clarity. We know. This is what Rav Nachman was talking about, but we can't go through it all here. But we know that the Gemara is the hotbed of Machloket. Anything that anybody says in the Gemara is someone else who disagrees. And that what we try to do is figure out a way to bring these two positions closer to each other. But when we can't, we recognize the fact that this is the problem of words. Words are hard to define. If you go into it deeper and deeper, you find it more and more difficult to come up with a uniform result. That's why we have literary
I'm in the
criticism.
middle of a shiur. I'll call you back, okay?
Literary
Great. I'll call you later again. Bye-bye.
criticism is about how to disagree about what the author really meant, or how to disagree about what the classical work was really pointing us to. What's the solution? What's the solution? Is there some way? I mean, so if we approach God with our interpretation, we came here, we're learning Torah together, we approach God with our interpretation, you say, how are we doing? You don't get much of a response. Don't give us because we could do better. We could be clearer. We could do it in a way that is so much better than the way that we're doing it, the way that we are trying to understand it. What saves us? I'm talking about Rav Nachman, right? I'm talking about Rav Nachman, I don't have to defend it. What saves us is the nigun. And you know that nigun, you don't feel the sense of machloket. You don't feel when you're singing in a group with a large group of people, you don't feel the difference of opinion. You feel holding it together. And it doesn't matter, I think, it doesn't matter what the words say. And you could repeat words again and again, backwards and forwards, and come up with some kind of strange alternative order for the words that you are singing, because it doesn't really matter. You've left the world of the words and you're on the way to the world of Shira. You're on your way to the world of Shira. And so leaving the world of words and going to the world of Shira is a kind of a clarification. Like you feel better about it. You feel good about what you're doing. It's not the clarification of words, but it's the clarification of who you are. And anybody who plays music, anybody who's into, knows that the music is special. It's not just something you do, but it's something that you're able to take yourself and put it in a new place. Put it in a new place. It's not the same as saying the words. Not the same as saying the words. And I think that that's the reason it certainly is indicative of the fact that we, in our own kind of organizing, davening, very often want to include music in the davening, even though there's a contradiction, I think, between saying the words and doing the music. But we want to do the music. We feel that it's the better. It's better than saying the words. But we're sometimes a little stuck in a place where we can't really move. So the Rav Nachman says, Shekol chachma v'chachma ba'olam yesh la zemer v'nigun miyuchad. What does that mean? It means understanding. You could reach to understanding. You could reach up. Every chokhmah, anything that you're doing, you could sing it. You could sing it nigun miyuchad, shezeh zema miyuchad lechokhmah zo, umizeh zema nimshechet chokhmah azot. Somehow there's this relationship. What's the relationship? The chokhmah is physics, is literature, is language. I mean, that's all the chokhmah that we know. He says, no. It's clearer, it's better, it helps you to understand, what's going on. So even though I said that Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching B'nai Yisrael how to thank God, I would retract that now and tell you, let's look again at that pasuk. Let's look at the pasuk. Az Yashir Moshe uBnei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was leading them into Shira Hazot LaShem, that a Shira can bring you closer to God. A Shira can answer the question. Is there going to be a promise? Is the promise going to be fulfilled? It's going to be fulfilled. Will we get to Eretz Canaan? We're going to get to Eretz Canaan. The certainty, the clarity comes from the Shira. Comes from the Shira. It's not the Shira of thanking God. I mean, it was God who promised that we did. It's the knowledge that we suddenly have that the promise that God made is in effect. Nothing has changed at the Shira Zot by Yomru Lemor. And they said together, Shira Lashem Kinga, oh God, we don't know. But we can assume that there was music. That there was music and that the music took the people out of the words and made them. And that's why if you look at the Shirat Hayam, you'll see not all the words seem to be relevant to what's going on, because the idea was to sing it together, Shira, Shira Hazot. And so, Vatikach Miriam HaNeviyah, the Torah has to stress that Miriam was a bona fide Neviyah. She was able to do for the women what Moshe Rabbeinu did for the men. What did he do? He clarified the relationship between Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which was not clear until that very moment. Along came Miriam, and Miriam was a Neviyah. For some reason or other, we'll take Rashi's interpretation, she was a Neviyah. And she was able to clarify to the women. I mean, this was the moment when Am Yisrael was created, because one of the definitions of Am Yisrael is that they had trust in God. They trusted. They knew that whatever happened, the promise would be fulfilled. Right? But two people with cholot, they had the music. I assume that the men also had the music. Matan led Miriam, and Miriam spoke the words that they didn't know. Shir Lashem ki goga susur rochvo ramavaya. So we have this kind of learning. We're learning what we see is that Yitziat Mitzrayim was not accomplished. Nothing was accomplished for the Egyptians at all. They were not able to absorb the idea of one God, one power, one authority. They were not able to absorb that. And therefore, they were destroyed. B'nai Yisrael, at first, was not certain about the promise. They were saying to themselves, let's get something now. Let's get it right away. Let's do it, you know, before it goes away. But after Kriyat Yam Suf, Moshe Rabbeinu, and they understood that Moshe Rabbeinu was the tzaddik that Rav Nachman is talking about. That he was the person who knew how to connect Am Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they sang together. They sang together the words of Shirat Hayam. And why did they sing together? Because that took them above the words, beyond the words of promise. Took them in a place where they could feel connected to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that gave them confidence that the future is intact. And that was the point, after all, of Yitziat Mitzrayim. All the best. Have a wonderful week and good Shabbos.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.